Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are introducing a new company to the show. The company is Millennial Precious Metals, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol MPM and on the OTCQB under the symbol MLPMF. We are chatting with the president and CEO, Jason Kosick. Now, just to bring everybody up to speed, initially here, Millennial Precious Metals is focused on discovering quality ounces in Nevada and Arizona. The company holds a handful of projects, 7 projects in total, spread around Nevada with the goal to build a multi-million ounce production company. You guys are focused on well-known jurisdictions. So, Jason, before we get into some of these projects, take us through how this company, how Millennial Precious Metals came together, please.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Corey and Chad. Much appreciated. And thanks for your listeners for joining in today. We really started this company about 2 years ago. My partners, Terry and Ruben, we had an idea of getting a toehold into the United States and primarily looking at assets in Idaho, Utah, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and avoiding California, Wyoming, Montana for obvious permitting reasons. We did over 337 desktop reviews, 47 site visits. So these assets were hand selected. And really the selection criteria for the assets were, we were looking at the oxides, making sure they had good leachability. Mountain View and Wildcat leach around 80 to 85% on a coarse bottle roll on the oxides. And the sulfides have good leachability around the 30 to 50% range. As people know, you know, the sulfides are refractory or encapsulated. You know, it's a 10-year lineup for the autoclave. So those are the key selection criteria and how the company was really formed. And it took, you know, quite a bit of time and quite a bit of due diligence to build such a diverse and quality portfolio of assets.
All right, let's talk about some of those assets, because as I said, 7 projects in total, and you guys more or less have these organized in terms of different stages here. You have 2 projects in the development stage, the Wildcat property and Mountain View property. They combined have a 1.2 million ounce resource, oxide resource. And then you also have a more advanced, let's call it exploration story at Red Canyon and some grassroots exploration at Eden, Dune, Mar, and Oxalot. Let's talk about the development stage projects here, Wildcat and Mountain View. Starting with Wildcat, that encompasses a little over 770,000 ounces in the most recent resource estimate at 0.4 grams per ton gold. Take us through the Wildcat property, some of the historic work that's been done to build up that resource, please.
For sure. Wildcat is a low sulfidation epithermal. It sits in the Farrell Mining District, just 56 kilometers from Lovelock. Quite a bunch of historical data, about 256 RC holes, totaling about 95,000 feet. The current resource, you know, it's important to know that these are just oxide ounces. They're pit constrained ounces. So we use a $1,500 pit shell, $2 a ton mining, $4 a ton processing, $2 a ton GNA. Like you said, it sits at 776,000 ounces. And the key thing is that it's no strip. So for those listeners out there, you know, grade is great, don't get me wrong, but mining is quite simple and it just comes down to margin. And, you know, when you're sitting at 0.4 gram per ton oxide, you know, you're looking at $28 a ton in situ value rock, okay? And our operating, our costs are $8. So it's a significant margin. And that's really what we're building here is a high margin business. And that speaks to the quality of these ounces. What we really like about Wildcat is, okay, the ounces are there, puts a peg in the valuation, but the blue sky potential is significant. And what we've done is we've mapped the mineralizing horizon by 2.3 kilometers by 1.2 kilometers, you know, and doing, you know, simple math, you know, using 2.7 for density, you could see how we can significantly grow the resource base north of that, you know, one and a half million ounce threshold that we have. And that's not including any of the transition or any of the sulfides. The other thing we really like about it is the plumbing system has never been identified. And there's historical intercepts, you know, of a meter of over 100 gram per ton. And that's really the plumbing system that's feeding the lower grade halo in a nutshell. And we're going to be putting around 4,100 meters into the project in the springtime of 2022. That drill program will feed an updated resource in the third quarter. That will be the foundation for the PEA in the fourth quarter of 2022.
So talking about some of the drilling that is planned, those 4,100 meters, is that to convert ounces or is that to simply grow the resource? Also take us through what some of the key targets are then, please.
Yeah, so the 4,100 meters is primarily to understand what the resource conversion rate is and identify the plumbing system and to obviously expand it in some areas. Right now, we're constrained by what permit we're under. We're under an NOI permit, which gives us 5 acres of disturbance, and we'll have the plan of operations permit sometime in the next 12 to 14 months. And that'll allow us to drill off the entire district and really show the true size potential of that mineralized footprint.
Okay, Jason. Well, now let's pivot over to the second project we want to highlight that's had a bit of drilling, and that's Mountain View. You've got 427,000 ounces in reserves there, and you've seen some higher grades there. Walk us through this project and why you're excited to keep drilling it this year.
For sure. So again, this is a low sulfidation epithermal in the deep hole district, 24 kilometers outside of Gerlach, just over 2,500 RC and diamond holes were completed historically. The resource right now sits at 427,000 ounces at 0.57. This is using a $1,500 pit shell, $2 ton mining, 4 processing, 2 G&A. So significantly higher margin on this one, sitting at almost 0.6. So you're looking, you know, closer to $35 a ton in situ rock here and still $8 a ton processing. What we've seen with the recent drilling is we've really starting to identify the higher grade plumbing system. And what that looks like is almost a meter of 141 gram per ton, 3 meters of almost 50 gram per ton. So this is the plumbing system that's feeding this lower grade zone. What we really like about the project here is not only the plumbing system that can add significant high grade ounces, but the consistency of mineralization. And I'm talking, 128 meters of 1.7, 275 meters of 0.5. Just to put that into perspective for all your listeners out there, the average grade of the Great Basin for oxide projects is 0.3. So all ounces cannot be compared equally. So sulfide, oxides, refractory to non-refractory. The way to look at it is really from a margin perspective. And when you combine Mountain View and Wildcat, you're looking at a combined grade of around 0.42, 0.45. So like I said, you're looking at $30 a ton in situ rock and an operating cost of $8. So a very high margin business, and that's what we're building here. And that's what really stands us out from our peer group.
Yeah, Jason, it's important to look at not just the grade ounces, but the economics. But when you have double the grade of your peers, that doesn't hurt. One other thing on that plumbing, as you start looking for the feeder system there, does that mean that some of the drilling you're going to do, you're going to have to go deeper down to find where that feeder system emits from? And how will that inform the drilling you do in 2022?
That's exactly right. So the way these things form, really think about them as a mushroom. Okay, so the fluid migrates up vertically up the stem, and that would be your boiling zone or your high grade zone, and then produces this disseminated cap, which you get this nice disseminated oxide open pitable resource. So the idea is that we're going to drill underneath the cap and target the stem in some of the exploration holes that we're doing this year. And, you know, we already have evidence of two intercepts in that higher grade zone. You know, 0.8 of 141 grams was the first kind of intercept just displaying that that bonanza zone.
All right, let's move on to the, let's call it more advanced exploration story here, the Red Canyon Project. I will also post a map below this interview that summarizes where all of these projects are located in Nevada, but Red Canyon, it's a bit more of the, let's call it advanced exploration story over some of the grassroots projects. What can you give us history-wise on the Red Canyon property, please?
Yeah, so Red Canyon, you know, as an exploration geologist myself, I get really excited about it. And why I get excited about it is that it sits in the Battle Mountain Eureka Trend, 35 kilometers south of the Cortez Complex, which is, you know, Barrick's biggest complex in Nevada. It sits in the same rocks as Gold Rush, as Cortez, as Pipeline, as Horse Canyon. So it sits in the Wenban Formation. It also sits on the same fault system that goes through the Cortez Complex. And the intrusive rocks are dated at 35.5 Ma, which is the peak mineralizing event for Carlin-style systems. You know, Carlin-style systems could be 300,000 ounces like a gold bar, or they could be 20 million ounces. So, you know, they have the potential to be something world-class. And in some of the intercepts that we drilled in 2021, were some of the best intercepts I've seen to date come out of Nevada. And I'm talking 54 meters of 4.5 gram oxide from surface, you know, 30 meters of 2.8, 22 meters of 2.6. So significantly higher grades than the average grade in the basin. And you know, I'm not going to go into great detail of kind of the checklist of when you're looking for Carlin style systems, but Red Canyon checks that box. And it's probably got the best area code in Nevada.
Jason, real quick, there's also an earn in option on Red Canyon. Could you just unpack that for our audience so they understand it a little bit better?
Yeah. So it's an earn in agreement from a private landsman in Nevada. So it's minimum payments up front. You know, $25,000, $50,000, $75,000, and then a $2 million trigger at year four if we want to exercise the option. The beauty about this is that there is no royalty on this property, which is extremely rare in Nevada. So part of that agreement, we would grant them, if we exercise the option, grant them a 2% NSR, but we have the right to buy back 1% for $1.5 million.
All right, let's move on to these grassroots projects. As I mentioned, there are four in total, all in Nevada again. What do you want to highlight with these grassroots projects and how they play into the bigger strategy here for the company?
Yeah, you know, Dune, Eden, Mar, and Oslo are all kind of phase one target generation projects, okay? And I strongly believe that all the new discoveries in Nevada are going to be made out in the basin. When we were looking at assets along the main trend, the Getchell, the Carlin, the Battle Mountain Eureka, a lot of the things that were open had the same exploration model, is that, you know, you have a nice alteration in the upper plate and that we're going to drill through the upper plate and the lower plate's going to be mineralized. And that's exactly how junior companies will go broke. That's for the Barricks and the Kinrosses and the Anglo Golds of the world to do that type of exploration. Where we saw that there was a lot of value that we could pick up for quite cheaply is in the basin, in the epithermal environments. And that's what we really specialize in. And that's exactly what Dune, Eden, Mar, and Oslo are. They're low sulfidation epithermals that sit in the basin. I think they all have wonderful geochem and geophysical signatures that are indicative of low sulfidation epithermals, but they need that systematic scientific work. And we need to really crack open our geological toolbox, so to speak, to bring them up to a drill stage. And really, we understand that the market doesn't give you value for any of that, but I think one of them has the potential to be, you know, a nice new discovery in Nevada. The reality is exploration is a risky business. And so all of them aren't going to make it. And our job is to allocate capital in an economic way to kind of unlock the value on one of them, because I'll tell you, they're all not going to make it.
Jason, I like hearing that, just because a lot of companies are one-hit wonders and they put all their eggs in one basket, and it's a smarter approach with exploration to get a lot of projects going and see which ones actually pan out. And then, like you say, the reason you drill it is to kill it. But do you think you would keep the option open if you do start getting some success on one of those four to maybe JV it out to another company or bring in a strategic partner to help? Because most of the focus is on Wildcat and Mountain View, and then, you know, a lot of focus on Red Canyon. So it's hard to drill seven projects simultaneously. Would you be open to bringing in a partner on any of those?
You know, we're always open to that, but it has to be on the right terms for us. And the reality is that the way we built this portfolio is it's a very well diversified portfolio of assets. And what we'll do is, once Wildcat and Mountain View go into a mine permitting stage, you know, Red Canyon, Dune, Edenmar, Oslo, one of those will go into a resource stage and then go into a permitting stage. So we always have that organic growth within the company. I think you hit the nail on the head there. Is our job as geologists is to drill and kill projects. And there's too many companies out there that are, you know, one asset companies that keep on drilling in the same area when they know it's never going to make it. So, you know, we could drill these for quite cheaply to see if it has the geometry to host that million ounce threshold. So a long-winded answer to say we can drill them ourselves. If they don't meet our criteria, then, or it's going to be too expensive, then we would look to divest or JV them out.
Perfect. That covers all the projects. Then let's get into the team, because the team also critical when doing your due diligence on any resource company. Jason, give us a little background on yourself, please.
For sure. I started off with Trelawney. We put the first holes into Côté Gold, which is now owned by IAM Gold. It's the third largest gold deposit in Canada. So we're as a key member of that. Subsequent to that, I was with IAM Gold for a number of years. In 2015, I joined the Talisker Group, and we did all the technical due diligence for all Osisko-related companies. So Windfall, which is Osisko Mining, Barkerville, which is the Cariboo Project, Miner Alamos, we did quite a bit of work on as well. And between myself, Terry, and Ruben, you know, we've put up over 59 million ounces of discoveries across seven projects. And the key metric to that is that of the seven, five of those projects are in construction or in production today. So, you know, between the three of us, we've done this, you know, multiple times. We have Sarah Heston, who's a business professor at Stanford, on the board as well. We have Mike Leskovic, who is the CFO of Nighthawk and the CFO of Northfield Capital, which is a fund in Toronto. We also have Eric Tremblay, who built Canadian Malartic with Osisko as Canada's largest gold mine. He's also the COO of Dalradian. And we also have Jason Banducci to really round out the team as our VP of Corporate Development. And he comes from the investment banking world and did 5 years with Stifel GMP on the mining investment team. So really a well-rounded team that's, you know, covers all facets of the industry and, you know, guys that have done it before and discovered quality ounces is the key to that.
Well, Jason, that's a nice snapshot of the team and of the board. Just maybe give us a little bit more on Ruben, since he's the chief geologist and director. He's going to be overseeing a lot of the drilling. What does he bring to the table as far as that side of it, the exploration side of the business?
Yeah, you know, Ruben is a PhD geologist. He is the head geologist at BHP and AngloGold Ashanti. He discovered Escondida East or Escondida Deep, which is over 1 billion pounds of copper. He also discovered Los Colosos and Gramalote for AngloGold Ashanti. He is also the CEO of Sable Resources, which is our Latin America vehicle. and comes from, you know, very strong technical background. As I mentioned, he's a PhD in magmatic and in epithermal deposits. So exactly what we're doing here. He's kind of one of the guys who's wrote the book on these types of deposits.
All right, let's talk share structure then, Jason. I'm seeing just over 138 million shares outstanding on a fully diluted basis, right around 148 million. There's a pretty good allocation here between institutional, retail, and management. I'm seeing retail holds about 26%, institutions hold about 50%. Can you highlight some of the larger key shareholders in this company, please?
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at the share roster, you would never see a share roster like that on a company sub $100 million market cap, okay? And I think that speaks to the track record of myself, Terry, and Ruben. You know, guys like Peter Miletus at Merck at 9.4%, Eric Sprott at 8.1%, Vescore, which is a $20 billion pension fund, Franklin Templeton at 4.9%, which is one of the largest precious metal funds in North America. And, you know, guys like John Case at Century really add to the strength of our share structure. I myself am one of the largest shareholders, just under Eric, around 7.8%, you know, put over $550,000 of my own cash into this thing. I'm not Richard Warwick. I can't cut checks for $100 million. You know, I'm 34, but I put a significant chunk of my savings into this. So institutionally, it's 50% held. Insiders, probably just over 11.5%. The Waterton Group owns 9.7%. It should be noted that those shares are locked up under TSX escrow agreements with release dates in May of 2022 and November of 2022. And then a small little portion to the guys at Red Canyon at 2%. So really, you're only looking at 26.5% float on the stock. So very tightly held. And, you know, the thing trades quite well. It averages about around 350,000 shares a day. So quite happy about the performance since we went public in May.
Okay, Jason, and just walk us through what kind of cash the company has in the treasury and what the general budget will be for 2022.
All right, so the current cash position is $16 million. That'll get us, that'll execute the drill program, the PEA in the permitting for next year.
All right, let's wrap it up here, Jason. Then just with a quick summary, news flow wise, what should investors, those watching the company, what can they expect?
Yeah, so we'll have consistent news flow led by the drill bit. So, you know, we try to get results out every month. It'll start off, we'll continue with Mountain View. Then you will see results from Wildcat. You'll see some initial metallurgical work from Wildcat and Mountain View, followed by the updated resource for Wildcat and Mountain View at the end of the third quarter, and then the PEA at the beginning of the fourth quarter. That's from a news flow perspective. And I guess I just wanted to highlight one last thing is that when you're looking at projects in Nevada, and Nevada being the best mining jurisdiction in the world, because of Millennial's unique grade to strip ratio, we actually have the highest effective open pit oxide projects in Nevada. We sit at a grade of 0.42. As I mentioned, the average grade in the basin is 0.32. And when you look at companies, you know, like Mother Lode or even GSV, they sit at 0.86. And when you factor in the strip, they actually sit at 0.28. So that just goes to show how robust these projects are in the heart of the best mining jurisdiction in the world.
All right, Jason, appreciate this introduction. If anybody has any follow-up questions, wants any more information on any of these projects or any of the strategy coming out of the company, please email us either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. We'll also follow up on the back of some news, near-term news, to get some more information from the company. But in the meantime, Jason, keep us up to date on that news. And thank you again for the introduction.
Thanks a lot, guys. And thanks to your listeners out there.